Solitaire Rose Novelcast, All In, Part 6. Solitaire Rose Novelcast is where I, Corey Strode, take the novels I've written and turn them into audiobooks, and then eventually ebooks. I say eventually because it's turning out to be harder than I thought it would be, but I'm still moving forward on that project. Okay, I haven't been moving forward on any projects the last month because as we're building to the Minneapolis two-day convention, and episode 250, and a number of other things, I've just kind of been able to get the podcast out. So this one is hitting on time. I'm actually kind of proud of that because I will be finishing up with mere moments left before I have to go to work. What you need to know. Johnny Finch lives in a small town of Ravensport, Illinois. Ever since high school, he has wanted to be a professional poker player. And he spent his college learning how to play poker, amassing a bankroll so that he could join one of the big poker tournaments. And after graduating, he went to one of those big tournaments and was knocked out on the first hand. Now, he's trying to figure out what to do with his life. His girlfriend, Dawn, is trying to push him toward moving away from the small town he had spent his whole life in. And now, All In, Part 6. Chapter 12. 3 days later, Johnny was at the poker table set up in his dining room. It was a small game, just six players, none of whom he hadn't played before. Kyle and James were playing since it was a simple $50 buy-in, as well as Becky's boyfriend Tommy and two of his co-workers, Bill and Kenny. Bill was older than the rest of them, in his mid-30s. He'd been playing for a long time in a home game that had been running for a couple of years with his friends. He was a tall, stocky guy who shaved his head when he started going bald. He had a rough face and looked as if he'd been a laborer his whole life with big beefy arms and brown eyes that looked as if they were permanently squinting. Kenny was about their age and had just gotten married the month before. He had a lightly trimmed beard with no mustache, short black hair that had a lot of natural curl, and a high forehead that made him look like he could easily outthink everyone in the room. They'd played for about an hour, Texas Hold'em, but with a $1 limit on raises. After that hour of social play, Johnny was the chip leader, but not by a whole lot. Kyle was on the short stack and was well on his way to getting good and drunk. The others were pretty much even, maybe $5 up or down. Johnny had been playing tight, folding most of his hands and only showing when he had the best hand. The other players would show their hands when they were beat, letting him know how they bet, when they would call, and how often they would throw good money after bad, chasing a straight or a flush. He looked around the table and went through how they played their hand. Kyle and James would bet as long as they had a hope of getting a hand, even if there was only a single card that would get them the hand they wanted. They would also both call to keep you honest, which meant that he couldn't run bluffs on them, but it also meant that they threw away a lot of money. Tommy was a typical casual player, playing more hands than he should, and usually staying in when he had a pair or a chance at a better hand. He'd played a lot of flops, and folded if there was a bet after the flop, but he won more hands than the other two. Kenny was a halfway decent player, and if he played against the others, he'd win their money every time. Played tight, but his problem was he only played tight. He didn't know how to raise the pressure and bet hard when he was against someone with a weak hand. If he played for a year or two, he'd become a good player. Bill was a good player. He was of the old school, playing slowly, only staying in with solid hands, and he knew when to put on the pressure. Of all the players at the table, he was the only one who was a challenge. Johnny was looking for his tells, but he hadn't figured them out yet, but he knew he had to have them. He rarely bluffed, but there were a few hands where he'd bet big. Johnny played back at him, and he'd folded the hand, which meant he wasn't afraid of bluffing, but he was afraid of getting caught bluffing. Johnny had been playing tight as well, which was always the right thing to do against calling stations, which is what they call players who call all the way down even if they have crappy cards. If Kyle or James were in a hand, he'd play exceedingly tight, but if they were out, he'd loosen up a bit and try to push people around. "I think we've had enough of this limit stuff," Kenny said. "I think we should play the game the old first hand is known for. A little no-limit tournament style. Bill frowned and said, I don't care for that stuff. Tommy laughed and said, oh, come on, Bill, don't be an old man. Besides, maybe you could get him to go all in on the first hand. Everybody laughed but Johnny, who smiled politely and watched Bill's reaction. He was laughing, but he wasn't happy about the turn of events. He'd played against guys like him, guys who thought that Hold'em was a stupid game and preferred to play five-card draw, as if it were the only game around. They might delve into a seven-card game once in a while, but Hold'em was some stupid flashy game for TV. He might have to push Bill a bit to get him to play. That's cute, guys, but I'm not in for it. I think I've won enough for the night, Johnny said, smiling and giving Bill the eye. Hey, Bill said, not smiling anymore, you have to give us a chance to win our money back. A one-hour poker game ain't a game at all. Hooked, Johnny thought. Older players don't like the idea of someone walking away while they were up if the night was young. Now to reel him in. This is funny and all, but I promised Dawn I wouldn't play No Limit anymore. She's still pissed about me losing my bankroll. To hell with what she thinks, Bill said, and Johnny knew he'd just won. If he'd made it out that he was pussy-whipped, Bill was a good enough player to know that Johnny would be off his game and worried that his old lady would be mad if he lost. It wasn't true, of course. In fact, he thought that Don was a little upset with him for not playing anymore, but it worked better to get them to play loose if he were a reluctant player. All right, since you put it that way, I'm in. What shall we say are the starting blinds and antes, Johnny said, trying not to smile. They started slowly, with little more happening as they played, except for the money continuing to flow as it had been. The table talk slowed as the people took the game more seriously. For the next hour, Johnny simply spent his time grinding out the money, not making any big bets, and making sure to defend his blinds. At the end of the hour, both Kyle and Rob were short-stacked, and probably only had about three sets of blinds and antes available to use. Tommy'd been holding his own and was keeping up with things. He hadn't gotten much money, but he hadn't lost any either. Bill, the older gentleman, was playing more aggressively, showing that he had switched gears, and Jason, the younger gentleman, was keeping evens by simply defending his antes and blinds. The game was stale. Johnny knew that someone was going to have to take control of the game and speed the pace by ramping up their betting, but he didn't know if it should be him. He knew the table, but he was unsure of his own instincts. Sure, he knew the odds and the numbers, but was he right about reading the people and knowing when he could bluff them out and when they were holding in to try to catch a long shot? He wasn't sure, so he stayed back. The blinds and antes doubled, then doubled again as he sat back and only played the top 10 hands, dropping quickly if an overcard appeared or if the board was 3 to a straight or a flush. He was doing well, though, and continued to only show his cards if he won and mucking them if he lost so people wouldn't know if he was chasing a card, had a medium hand, or was simply bluffing. Right before the blinds were to raise again, Tommy pushed in with $10, about one-fifth of his stack. Everyone folded around to Johnny, who was about to look at his cards, but then stopped to count his chips to get a good read on if it was worth it for him to go in on such a big pot. Jesus, first hand, do you ever bet with anything other than pat hands? Tommy said, laughing. All we have to do is figure out how to bluff you, and you'll fall down. It's kind of sad, really. Are you trying to put me on tilt? Johnny said, feeling the old arrogance flooding him with adrenaline. Because if something that sad would put me on tilt, I really need to quit playing this game. Kind of like how you will feel in about 30 seconds, because right now I'm going to raise and I'm coming in for $20. Did you look at your cards? Tommy said, smile fading from his face. Johnny didn't answer. He sat there stone-like, staring at the bridge at Tommy's nose. He was looking close enough at his eyes that it would be disconcerting, but off just a hair to make him wonder, and possibly call. Tommy looked at his cards again and started fingering his chips. It would take another fourth of his stack to call, and Johnny still had the chip lead. In any other circumstance, Johnny would not have called, let alone raised, but the old poker rules flashed through his head. The main one was that weak is strong, and strong is weak. If a player acts strong, it's because his cards are weak and he wants you to fold, but if his cards are strong, he'll act as if his cards are weak to try and get more players to bet. Tommy was also a smart enough player that Johnny knew he wouldn't bet a lot with a big pair or a pair of big cards because he would want to keep people in the pot to try and get action. So, from his action, it was easy to tell that Tommy had weak cards. Johnny also knew it didn't matter what cards he had. This kind of play wasn't about the cards. It was about playing the player, and he knew that Tommy was weak. Tommy fingered his chips and then counted them out, looking at what would be left in his stack if he bet. He looked at Johnny again, who hadn't moved a muscle or taken his gaze off the bridge of his nose. He simply sat there and thought about what his next move would be, trying to think three steps out. If Tommy called, he'd push all in on the flop and scare him off. If he raised instead of calling, Johnny would look at his cards and go all in as long as he had face cards with a strong kicker. If he folded, he would start playing aggressively at Tommy to keep him off his game and knock him out quickly. Johnny wanted to keep Kyle and Rob in the game since they were dead money anyway, and it made it easier to knock off the good players if they were faced with people who wouldn't fold to a bluff. "Not talking so tough now, are you, Pepper Boy?" Rob said, laughing. "I'm just trying to figure how much to raise back," Tommy said. At that point, Johnny knew what he had. It was a small pair. Tommy was the kind of player who liked pushing people out with them. If it was a big pair, he would have beat him in the pot. If it were a stone-cold bluff, he would have folded already. Upset, he got his fingers stuck in the cookie jar. He rolled back the different cards Tommy had played and matched it to the bet he'd made. Tommy bet hard before the flop when he had less than a pair of sevens or had suited connectors, but he was more nervous with suited connectors. So, he had a pair of sevens or less, which meant that he shouldn't call. The table was eerily silent, and Johnny waited. After another few seconds, Bill said, "I call time," which meant that Tommy had exactly 60 seconds to decide, one of the table rules they'd established. "I want to get in the next hand before I join the AARP. "What do you have, first hand?" "An ace? You've got an ace? An ace? Maybe a king. King and a jack? Maybe an ace and a king? Pair of kings? King and a queen?" "Shut the fuck up," both Rob and Kyle said in unison. Johnny, however, didn't move. He didn't react. He simply sat there and waited. Poker was the only time he ever had any patience, and now his patience was infinite. "Fine," Tommy said. He looked at his cards one last time and then tossed them back to the dealer. "You got it. What did you have?" Johnny smiled and slid his cards back to the dealer and said, "Balls." "I had balls." "Burn," Kyle said as he took the cards and started shuffling. The game continues, but that had put Tommy on tilt, which is a nice way of saying he started playing like shit. Tommy blew through the money he'd been winning and was now down with the other short stacks within a half hour, staying in on marginal hands, always staying in if Johnny was in. Johnny continued to play tight, and he and Bill quickly pushed their leads up as they played. By the time the blinds and antes went up again, Kyle and Rob were both out and sitting away from the table, drinking a beer and eating one of the sandwiches Dawn had made for them before she went to work. Johnny looked over and saw that they'd been playing a little over 5 hours, and Tommy was down to his last $5, not enough to meet the big blind of six. Tommy was dealt his hand, looked at it, looked at the other players, and said, "I'm all in," and shoved his final chips into the pot. Bill laid down his hands, and Jason folded as well. Johnny looked at his cards, a five of spades and a seven of diamonds. He looked over at Tommy and smiled. He tapped the table, took back one of the dollar chips, and turned over his cards. "They suck, but since I'm already in, I might as well see what happened. I'll double you up." Tommy grinned and turned up a queen of spades and a jack of spades. Jason was dealing. He took both hands and laid them in front of them on the green felt of the poker table. Johnny took a drink of his Diet Cola and leaned back in his chair. Jason smiled and said, "Good." He put one card to the side and turned up the next three. Five of diamonds, five of clubs, and the seven of spades. Johnny looked at his cards. Five of spades and a seven of diamonds. He looked over at Tommy and smiled. He tapped the table and took back one of his dollar chips and turned over his cards. "They suck, but since I'm already in, I might as well see what happens. I'll double you up." Tommy grinned and turned up a queen of spades and a jack of spades. Jason was dealing, and he took both hands and laid them in front of them on a green felt of the poker table. Johnny took a drink of his Diet Cola and leaned back in his chair. Jason smiled and said, "Good luck." He put one card to the side and turned up the next three. Five of diamonds, five of clubs, and the seven of spades. "That's it," Johnny said. "There's no card you can catch that will give you a win." "Son of a bitch," Tommy said. "You got lucky on the flop." "No, I didn't get lucky. You blew it back when we faced each other down and you folded. Since then, you've been really pissed off and betting a lot more than you needed to. Up until then, you were actually playing well," Johnny said. "Yeah, yeah," Bill said, taking the cards and starting to shuffle. "You do the post-game analysis later. We've got three players left and I want to get home before 3 in the morning." Why? Jason said. We don't have to work tomorrow. Because if I get home after 3 a.m, the wife thinks I'm doing something I shouldn't. Are you doing something you shouldn't? Johnny asked, wondering if his wife was against poker. Son, Bill said, riffing the cards and dealing them out, I've been married for over 20 years to the first woman I ever slept with. I wouldn't know how to do something I shouldn't. They all laughed at that and continued to play. Johnny felt good, having knocked out the person he'd picked as his target for the night, settled back into playing a soft, non-aggressive style. He didn't press the other players unless he had a monster hand, and maintained the chip lead, letting the two of them trade the hands back and forth. Finally, after another hour of play, Jason was all in for the last of his stack against Bill, who was holding pocket queens against Jason's ace-10. Flop came and it didn't help Jason. Johnny calculated that Jason was about 10% to win, since he had to catch one of the three remaining aces or two of the remaining tens. There was no possibility for a flush or a straight. The next card came, was another low card, knocking out the possibility of catching two running tens. It was all down to the last card, and he was 6% to catch the ace he needed. Bill turned up the last card. 7, he said flatly. That finishes you. Tommy came over and sat in his old seat, as did the other players now, who was heads up between Johnny and Bill. Johnny had the chip lead, but it wasn't quite a 2-to-1 margin. Johnny reached out and shook Bill's hand and said, I guess it's just us now. Yep, Bill said. I heard that you used to be good when you got heads up. That still true? Dunno, Johnny said. First time I've been heads up in a month. And unlike other times when people ask him questions like that, he wasn't just giving an answer to set the tone for what he was about to do next. He really didn't know how he would do. Okay, guys, Jason said. I'll be the dealer so the two of you could concentrate on playing. Blinds are $4 and $8 with a $2 ante. Everyone sat down around the table and play began again. For the first 20 minutes, they simply traded blinds. Anytime one of them went in with a big bet, the other one would lay their hand down, respecting the raise. They'd played tight all night, so Johnny felt Bill would keep doing so. He also played tight, worried that if he pushed in at the wrong moment, he would get caught by Bill having a good hand. Johnny knew it was not the right way to play. When he got heads up, he usually got aggressive, pushing his chip lead around and trying to overpower the other player. But he couldn't. Every time he thought about going in with a small hand, he thought back to the tournament and how he'd trusted his judgment and gotten utterly hammered. Another half hour passed, and Johnny was dealt a pair of kings. He was on the dealer button, which meant he was the first to act on the first round of betting, and the last to act on all subsequent rounds. Rather than push hard at the pot and pick up the blinds, he just limped in, matching the big blind and saying, call. Bill looked at his cards and didn't show any emotion. He looked over Johnny's stack, and Johnny didn't move. He was still ahead, but not by much. Losing a single set of blinds would knock the chip lead out from under him. Bill fingered his chips and kept looking for a tell. When he didn't get one, he finally said, I'm going to raise 3 times the big blind. Bill pushed in another $24 in chips, leaving him with $93 in chips. Johnny had already done the math, and it would bring him down to $143 in chips. If he just dropped now, he would keep the chip lead, but getting pocket kings heads up was like being given a gift. In his mind, it took forever to decide, but really it was only a couple of seconds before he said, call. That was fast, is what Kyle said, which let him know that it didn't take as long as he thought he had. Jason swept all the chips into the middle and said, good luck. Put one card to the side face down, then he dealt the next three heads up. A king, a 4, and a 10. All of different suits. Johnny had 3 kings. Again. Bill was the first to act, and he tapped the table, indicating he was not betting. Johnny didn't want to scare him out of the pot, but wanted to see how much money he could get from him. The minimum bet was $8, but he knew if he bet the minimum, Bill would know something was up. He was a good player, not as good as people who'd been trouble for Johnny, but better than most of the people in town he'd played against. I'm in for 20, Johnny said, moving a small stack of chips in front of him. Bill called quickly, almost beating him into the pot. That worried Johnny, since if someone was putting their chips in that quickly, they were setting a trap. Bill obviously thought his hand was good and didn't want to give away its strength, but he just had. The next card came, an 8. Filled out all 4 suits on the table, meaning there was no way anyone could have a flush, and the cards were so far apart there was no chance for a straight. Bill checked again, and Johnny watched him. Bill was leaning back in his chair, casually fingering his chips, his cards in front of him. He hadn't looked at his cards since the flop, which Johnny was impressed with, but it also meant he wasn't on a flush draw, since people with a flush draw usually look back at their cards when the fourth card hits the table. Whatever he had, he'd hit it on the flop. Johnny was sure his kings were still holding, since he had the best possible hand. Still, he didn't want to scare Bill out of the pot, since there was not a hand he could be holding that would be ahead at this point. He checked as well. Bill checked, and Johnny checked as well. Final card, the river, came up on the table. A 10. Johnny could feel his pulse quicken and a knot form in his stomach. Bill didn't even pause, seeing the card saying, "All in," and he pushed his chips into the pot. Johnny did the math in his head rapidly. If he called and he was wrong, he'd be down to $50, and Bill would have $250. Not an insurmountable mountain to climb, but bad enough that he would have to double up twice to get the chip lead back. And against a player like Bill, that would be hard. The odds of Johnny drawing the exact same hand against the exact same hand were so small he couldn't even calculate it. Still, the thought nagged at him that there was no way this man would have gone all in unless he had an unbeatable hand. This is not some power-based player who's going to push all in just to steal the pot. This is a guy who wants him to go in with him because he knows he has the best hand. He looked at his cards again, then at the cards on the table. Three kings. The kind of hand that players would kill for going into an all-in showdown. Johnny tapped the cards on the table, and the feeling he had when he saw the four tens against his three kings was palpable, clouding his vision. He could almost hear the big men in their nice suits telling him that it was time for him to get up from the table and leave the room. He tossed his cards into the muck, and Bill raked in the pot, discreetly handing his cards to the dealer. "We have a new chip leader," Jason said, shuffling the cards. Johnny stood up and stretched, saying, "I'm getting something to drink and hit the bathroom." "All right, 5-minute break," Jason said, putting the cards down and getting up from the table. Johnny went into the bathroom and turned the light on as he shut the door. There in the mirror, he saw himself. His shoulder-length hair was a mess, looking as if he'd been running his hands through it nonstop for a couple of days. His eyes were a tiny bit bloodshot, but he saw something in them he hadn't seen before in all his time of playing poker. He was scared. He was scared he'd lost his nerve, scared he couldn't hold up to the pressure, but mostly scared that he was going to lose. It was a fear that had never been there. Before, he'd always kept in his mind that he was the best player at the table, and as long as he stayed aggressive, he'd continue to win, or at least play the game it was meant to be played. Texas Hold'em was not a game that you could win by playing calmly and quietly. He didn't play that way all the time, but if you waited for pat hands and didn't try to steal pots, you'd be at the mercy of luck, and luck only holds out so long. "What the bloody blue bumblefuck am I supposed to do now?" he whispered to the face in the mirror. It didn't answer back. He washed his hands before leaving the bathroom and grabbed another diet soda, made his way back to the table. Everyone else took their seats exactly where they were before, and Johnny looked at Bill's chip stack. It was just slightly bigger than his, but it had changed the dynamic of the game. Before the last hand, Johnny could go all in, lose, and still have chips left. Now if he went all in and lost, he was done. Knocked out of the game and relegated to second place. It wasn't bad, since he would still get some of the money they'd all thrown in, but it rankled him that he was having to come from behind. Bill was good, but he wasn't a great player. He had flaws. He tended to play too tight with his hands, even now in the game. He could underestimate the strength of his hands, and Johnny could tell that he would rather be playing a game of dealer's choice. In the end, Bill was a gambler, not a poker player, and despite what people say, there's a difference. Johnny always bristled when people called him a gambler when he would talk about how he played poker and made decent money at it. Johnny didn't like betting. He hadn't placed a single bet on a sporting event. He'd only been to one casino, and that was because the tournament was being held there. He usually left a card game when the players started playing blackjack or guts, because that wasn't poker in his mind. It was random, and there was very little control over if he would win or not. Poker, at least poker the way he played it, was only random in the cards you got. The rest was a combination of strategy and psychology. Knowing how far you could push another player, knowing what made them nervous, knowing how likely you were to have the best hand, all of those things were what made poker more than just a random game of chance, like blackjack. Bill was the type of player who would be just as happy playing five-card draw with wild cards, Cincinnati, or guts, as long as there was money or action involved. Johnny had always beat those players because they were good enough to know how to play, but not good enough to understand how to use the game to their advantage. However, this time, he was being outplayed. It continued, with Johnny not playing as aggressively as he normally did. He slowly lost money over the next hour. It wasn't anything like a big hand that took him down, but he would play down to the river, and if a card came that made him nervous at all, he'd fold to any bet. After an hour, Johnny was down to the 50 bucks in chips he would have had if he would have lost if his three kings wouldn't have held up in the all-in showdown. That fact nagged at his thinking more than anything else in the game. He'd given up trying to find Bill's tells and was instead trying to get good cards so he could push in and double up. He hadn't gotten what he'd been looking for since coming back to the table. He'd gotten middle pairs and aces with low kickers that he'd folded at the first sign of resistance, and the few hands he'd won had been when he bet on the flop and Bill would reluctantly fold, meaning that he would have had next to nothing and was trying to get lucky on the flop. He only had two sets of blinds and annies left in his stack. Normally, when he would get down to less than four sets of blinds and annies, he'd go all in with just about any two cards that were above a seven, but he let the last two go without contesting the raise by Bill, leaving him where he was now. He was dealt his cards and looked to see that he had a nine and a five, both diamonds. Crap cards and cards he should have just mucked without thinking twice. But he was the short blind, and therefore would be in next time for the big blind. Bill matched the blind, and Jason said, "We have a flop," and dealt the three cards. A king, a jack, and a five, two spades, and a club. No way he could get a straight or a flush, but he had the low pair. Bill was first to act, and he tapped his hand on the table, indicating that he was checking and not making a bet. Johnny looked at his cards again, and pushed his last few chips in. Bill looked at his hand, then at the flop again, and then folded, giving Johnny the flop and bringing him up to a little over $70 in chips. For the next hand, Johnny was on the short blind and the first to act before the flop, and last on every other round of betting. Five of diamonds and the jack of hearts were sitting face down in front of him. "I raise," he said as he pushed all of his chips into the pot. Bill looked at his hand and tossed it quickly, giving Johnny the pot again, bringing him up to almost $100 now. Bill still had a 4-1 chip lead, but Johnny was coming back through sheer aggression. The others around the table were silent, absorbed in the game, and no longer talking about TV shows, movies, video games, or anything else they'd been discussing. They were watching, and Johnny knew why. They wanted to see if the hometown hero still had it. If he was still the card player who had been asked to leave most of the money games in town because of his ability to win every night. Johnny got his next hand and saw it was a three of clubs and a seven of spades. Not the worst hand in Hold'em, but pretty damn close. He was last to act, and he waited patiently for Bill to act. "All in," Bill said, and Johnny tossed his cards back in the mup before Bill could push a single chip into the pot. The next hand came up. Johnny got a queen and a five, both of diamonds. He dropped the hand back on the table and said, "All in," pushing all of his chips into the center of the table. Bill looked at his hand and said, "Call," flipping up a queen of clubs and a king of clubs, and giving him a commanding lead in the hand. "Damn," Rob said, shattering the silence. Jason took the two different pairs of cards and slid them in front of him. He said, "Good luck, gentlemen," and laid one card aside before dealing. The flop came the ten of spades, the two of diamonds, and the seven of hearts. The only way Johnny could win now was if the next two cards were diamonds, or if a five came on either of the next two cards. Jason put another card aside and turned up a jack of spades, killing any chance of Johnny catching a flush. The only way he could win the hand and stay in the game was if he was able to catch one of the three fives left in the deck. With 52 cards in the deck, the odds were slightly less than 6% for Johnny to catch the card he needed. You couldn't tell that by looking around the table, though. Everyone's eyes were glued to the table, watching to see what card would come next. "Last card," Jason said, laying a card aside and turning up the final card. Four of spades. No help for Johnny, and it gave Bill the win with a king high. "Good game," Bill said, reaching over the table and shaking Johnny's hand. Johnny didn't remember the rest of the night. He was too busy reliving the hand where he'd folded three kings over and over in his mind, knowing that despite the fact that the last hand was a king and a queen against a queen and a five. No, when he laid down the kings, he'd surrendered the game. He was still obsessing on it with Dawn the next morning as they sat in Perks Up and had coffee and pastries for breakfast. She loved the place for a weekday breakfast, since they both had jobs that gave them weekdays off, and spending a long morning there made her feel as if she didn't have to work instead of her normal feeling of working all the time. So, she started after their orders had come, are you ever going to tell me what happened last night? Why do you think something happened? Because, she said, moving one of her raspberry croissants over to his plate and stealing one of his mini muffins, you were going to play poker last night, and normally you can't wait to fill me in on the game in such excruciating detail I feel like I was there. I feel like I was sleeping there, but there nonetheless. It wasn't that big a deal. We got together and played cards. I ended up winning about $50. I doubled my money, so it was an okay night. It wasn't that big a deal. We just got together and played cards. I ended up winning about $100. I doubled my money, so it was an okay night. You're going to tell me, she said, smiling. I don't want to talk about it, he sighed. Don't make me resort to drastic measures. Hon, sweetheart, darling, love of my life, wearer of a ring that costs more than most of the cars in this town, I'd like to just have breakfast and not discuss the game last night. You know, she started in her snarky voice, I haven't gotten to do it in a long time, and if you don't tell me how last night was, I'll be forced to do it right here, in front of three waitresses and two old retired guys. Johnny simply raised an eyebrow at her, took a bite of the mini muffin that had migrated to his plate. Dawn shrugged and sang, Yo, tell you what I want, what I really, really want. She then stood up and flipped her long red hair to the side and thrust her hip out in the opposite direction and sang, So tell me what you want, what you really, really want. Johnny covered his face with his hands and she kept on, I want a huh, I want a huh, I want a huh, I want a huh, I want a really, 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 zig a zig ah, thrusting her pelvis at him with every huh and making him turn red as she started to get ready for another line of the song. Before she could go on, he said, All right, Ginger Spice, I'll talk. I'll talk already. Dawn stopped and bowed to the people watching, saying, Thank you, thank you. There are times I have no idea why I put up with you, Johnny said, a slight grin on his face. Because I'm the only one who will put up with you, she said sweetly and kissed him on the cheek. Johnny looked over at the older gentleman and saw that they were laughing at what had just occurred. Well, the waitresses had seen it before. Dawn always did that if she couldn't get him to talk, and sadly it always worked. Okay. We played a tournament, mostly because Tommy was being a complete ass clown and wanted to prove I'd lost my touch. So after a few hours I was able to knock him out on his ass and give him a snide remark as I did so. Tommy can be a complete bastard at times, Dawn said, but since Becky likes him, I put up with him. Johnny saw that she had more on her mind, but wasn't going to say it with him in the middle of a poker story. After his reluctance, he started telling the story the way he normally does, telling her of each mistake made by the other players and how he was able to capitalize on them. He started to gather steam and really got into the telling of the story until he got to the portion where he had three kings and laid it down. When he was done talking about that hand, he stopped, looked at the table, and took a deep drink of his chai tea. That was it, wasn't it? She said. Yep, he said simply. It's just one game, hon, she said, touching his hand softly. No, he said, it was the same hand, the same exact hand, and this time I couldn't call. I know he didn't have a pair of tens. I know it. The more I think about it, I know he had a king because of how he was acting, but it didn't matter. I could only see him having a pair of tens and knocking me out again. Okay, she said quietly. Maybe it is time for you to step away from the game for a while. Although you did double your money, which isn't bad. I remember nights when you would have been happy to double your money. I know, he said, but I should have won last night. Bill was good, but he always caved when I applied pressure. He was scared of the bigger hand, and if I bet like I had one, he'd always fold on the river. What are your plans for the rest of the day? She asked, knowing that he'd obsess on it if she let him. I will drop by work in an hour and see if they have any extra shifts for next week. Then I'm going to go home and lay on the couch until James gets home, and then go to my room and lay on the bed. Anything else? I don't think so. My social calendar is remarkably empty, he said, looking outside, and the summer cotillion isn't for at least a week or so. Then why don't you blow off going into work today? Take tomorrow off. Call in sick. Call in dead. Tell him you were hit by a banana truck, she said, smiling. I can't do that, he started. She cut him off and said, What are they going to do? Fire you? You're getting laid off in 3 weeks anyway. Take the day off, get some sick pay, and we'll go out to the lake. Just us. We'll take the day there and camp. We might never get a chance again. Why not, Johnny said. If we get jobs somewhere else, we probably won't have time to come back here and wander around a man-made lake with no beach. The thought hit Johnny a bit harder than it should. He was still looking down the double barrels of a job hunt and moving. That's all in part 6. I was kind of surprised. It's the first time that an entire chapter has made up a whole podcast. That was a longer chapter than I thought. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank the people who are telling their friends, who are spreading the word. Please continue to spread the word. Leave reviews on iTunes. That really helps. Leave reviews on Stitcher. Retweet, repost, let everybody know. If you enjoy this, please let people know. The more it grows, the more I can do this, and the happier I'm going to be. And we want me to be happy, don't we? This is a big time here at the Solitaire Rose Networks. We got all kinds of stuff going on. We have episode 250 coming out next week. And we are currently on the road to 250, which is also, believe it or not, the road to MSP Comic-Con, the two-day Minneapolis Comic Book Convention, 28 years and counting. And I've been a part of it since pretty much since the beginning. As we lead up to episode 250, we've got special podcasts for Crazy Comics and Stories at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. We got all kinds of great stuff going on. We got 5 podcasts in 2 weeks, which has to be a record for Crazy Comics and Stories. We have our regular podcast. Then we had a couple of guests, Steve Bryant and Mark Stegbauer, who've got a comic called Ghoul Scouts. They sat in on an episode. We had a lot of fun. Then next week, we have 2 free comic book day episodes. We go on a road trip. So we're going to have a podcast of us driving there and a podcast of us driving back. And then we have episode 250, where we've got myself, Joe Ryder, Dangerous Dan Moore, and the ubiquitous Jim Wicked. And we talk about SpringCon or MSP Comic-Con or whatever they're going to call it. Please listen. I've listened to 3 of the 5 episodes, and they're a lot of fun. And I've been on a road trip with Joe and Butch, who are going to be in the Free Comic Book Day episodes, and that's always a blast. So lots of podcasts coming up over the next week. I'm also doing the weekly news update. That's right, another news parody. This is a short 10 to 15 minute news headline parody. It's over at weeklynewsupdate.solitairerose.com. I did it for 10 years, starting in 1986, and I started it up again this year because, well, you kind of have to. As with all the podcasts here on the Solitaire Rose Network, we've got ads, and here they are. Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, bi-weekly, monthly. And your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world, and remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right, those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors. I want to thank everybody for the feedback I've gotten. I want to thank everybody for all of the help they've given over the past few weeks. And I also want to give a special shout out to our super fans. We've got some fans out there who've been with us since day one, who, well, maybe not day one, but within the first few months. And the feedback they give and what they let us know really makes this a lot of fun, a lot of worthwhile. I want to thank the other podcasts who have been talking about this podcast, and I want you to please keep spreading the word. We're like MST3K. Keep circulating the tapes. And I will be back in 2 weeks with the next part of All In.